One podcast to rule them all. One podcast to find them. One podcast to bring them all. And in the internet, bind them. You are listening to the Anomaly Podcast.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen.
Ooh, you're dead. Nah, you are not. Whoever did go, Frodo. Hanbachlin.
And I am an anomaly.
My name is Angela, and the women of my kingdom learned long ago that those without swords can still die upon them. I fear neither death nor pain, and I am an anomaly.
Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, people.
Your head is in the Lord of the Rings game.
It's not by intent. I had forgotten what our topic was going to be, even though you were so nice to write it down for us. And last weekend, I needed a little mommy break, so my mom took my little boy. As you can imagine, three-year-olds in Lord of the Rings, it's really not a very good idea because the orcs are really scary. I mean, they really are. And so when he was real little, I felt like I could watch it, but I don't think I can watch it with him in the room. But he wasn't at the house, so I was like, what can I watch without Russell in the house? Lord of the Rings. And of course, my favorite happens to be Two Towers, so I fired it up and I watched the entire thing while I was kind of cleaning the house and doing stuff. So accidentally, I prepared for this. And then on top of that, one of the big topics 2 or 3 days ago on Reddit was the nature of the ring, which was so interesting. And so it caused this big, not really a debate, but you know, all the Lord of the Rings nerds kind of were out there, which is the whole point of Reddit, I think, talking about the nature of the ring, what the ring does. I know there's a name for this, but when you just keep clicking links, you know, you decide, oh, I want to find out more about X. And then that leads you to something else and leads you to something else. And it's just like the internet rabbit hole. How far down can you go? And so then I was just immersed. I mean, I read for like an hour and a half, just random things about Lord of the Rings. So I'm really prepared for this today.
And if you haven't guessed, our topic for today is Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, the film. We will also be talking a little bit about the books, the video games, the soundtrack.
Sure.
Whatever is related to the film, okay. Which happens to rock in our opinion. Well, do you want to start by playing our listener comments?
Sure. Okay. That's always a good way to start.
Printing out emails. Here comes the emails being printed out.
Hey, Jen and Angela, it's Kevin Batchelder from the Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV podcast, among others. Very much looking forward to your Lord of the Rings Two Towers discussion. I thought I'd share some thoughts based on the item you posted up on Twitter, looking for us to send you some feedback. I missed your original Lord of the Rings show for Fellowship of the Ring. I don't think I was a subscriber at that point, so I didn't get a chance to send some general feedback. So my thoughts aren't specific to Two Towers, but more to the fandom and Lord of the Rings in general. I have to say it really helped to skyrocket me as far as getting much more involved in fandom back early 2000s when these movies were out. As you know, internet was kind of blowing up at that point, and a lot more fandom sites and such. And I was lucky enough in 2003 when they did the Trilogy Tuesday showings. I think it was 99 cities around the world where they showed the extended version of the first two films. This was the day before the premiere of Return of the King. So we had the extended version of those first two films along with the one-day early premiere of Return of the King, all in one long showing. 15 minutes between the movies. It was a good 13 hours in the theater. I paid more than I want to admit for that ticket because I had to go up on eBay to win an auction. But I got to tell you, the community of people who were there and that entire day still sticks in my mind, you know, almost 10 years later. It was some of the most fun I've ever had with people I didn't know at the time, in terms of between the movies talking, you know, ahead of time in the line, even afterwards at 2 in the morning, you know, breaking up in the parking lot. That really helped to get me involved in some podcasting and other stuff a couple of years later, realizing just how wonderful the different fandoms were. So I really think I owe it very much back to this movie trilogy and the meaning of the story as a whole. So just wanted to share that and let you know I appreciate the hard work you ladies do on the podcast. Very much looking forward to hearing it. Take care.
Angela and Jen want to hear from you. Call 432-363-4742 and leave them a message.
Thank you for your comments and for taking the time to send them in.
Hey, ladies. This is Rick Moyer. My wife would be with me, but she's working today. But we wanted to say hi to you and say we love Anomaly Podcast. We even have the t-shirts. We've been there. We have the t-shirt. Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to let you know my comments on Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. The Lord of the Rings is such an amazing story that I was so surprised when Peter Jackson was able to pull off this visually on the screen, because my imagination is pretty wild. And as I read the book, the books of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, I was filled with all sorts of different imagery. And I have to be honest, the movies really outdid what my imagination even thought. And that's pretty good as far as I'm concerned. So I was very impressed. I do have one criticism, though. I think I don't remember with the three movies. I'm not really sure what happened in each one of them, because it all runs together for me. Because maybe that's how the stories worked for me, or the story worked for me. It just kind of all ran together. The only criticism that I have of the entire movie thing was they were just so darn long. And I know a lot of people would have liked them to be longer, and they like the extended scenes and all that stuff. But there's just something about trying to watch something for 3 hours that is just it's difficult to do. And I don't know if it's just because of our attention span or what. But anyway, no criticism at all in how they handled it and what it looked like. It was fabulous. I just was... after a while, I just wanted to do something else. I know that sounds, maybe I'm not geeky enough or something, and I'm pretty geeky, but when it comes to Middle Earth, you know, maybe I just need it in shorter doses. Maybe it should have been 5 movies instead of 3. I don't know. So anyway, I love the concept and how they brought it to life. And like I said, they did better than my imagination. So very, very impressed. Cannot wait until I see The Hobbit. I know they're doing 2 movies for The Hobbit, and I'm just so excited for that. I've been watching the behind the scenes with the director and with the guy that played Gollum, Andy. I forgot his last name now. And they're just wonderful. If you haven't got a chance to do that, go and watch the behind the scenes videos. They've got like 3 or 4 out now that are just wonderful and just give you goosebumps, and you get so excited about being able to see this project done down the road. I thought I would end my comments by playing a song that I wrote. Well, I didn't write the song. John Mellencamp did, but I did a parody of it. And instead of Jack and Diane, I wrote a little ditty called Frodo and Sam. So I hope you enjoy it, ladies. And thanks again for all you do. Amy and I appreciate you and love you and look forward to your show and all the folks that help you with it. So thanks for everything. And enjoy the song, Frodo and Sam.
Wizard is never late, but a baggage. Nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to. If you're referring to the incident with the dragon, I was barely involved.
Little ditty about Frodo and Sam. 2 little hobbits growing up in the Shire Land. Frodo's gonna be a hero and more. Sam will protect him all the way to Mordor.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Sucking on a pint of ale at a party amidst the trees. After the speech, Cousin Bilbo disappears just like the breeze. Gandalf say, hey boys, we gotta go on a journey. Off to Rivendell, we got us some elves to see. And Frodo say, oh yeah, life will go on. Long after the ring of Sauron is gone. And oh yeah, life will go on. Long after the ring of Sauron is gone. They walk on.
Your time will come. You will face the same evil, and you will defeat it.
Frodo sits back and meets a guy named Strider. Gets stabbed by a witch king when he uses the ring. Rescued on a horse that runs through the water. Elrond says, hey, it was no big thing. Frodo says, oh yeah, life goes on. Long after the ring of Sauron is gone. Oh yeah. Long after the ring of Sauron is gone.
Welcome to Rivendell.
Gonna go through rock, high and low. The ring wraith riders come down, steal your soul. Hold on to the one ring as long as you can. Things gonna change for elves, hobbits, and men.
Many that live deserve death. Some that die deserve life. Can you give it to them, Frodo?
Oh yeah, life will go on. Long after the ring of Sauron is gone. Oh yeah. Long after the ring of Sauron is gone. Gollum, little ditty about Frodo and Sam. Two little hobbits growing up in the Shire Land.
The power of Isengard is at your command, Sauron.
Be on your guard. There are older and fouler things than orcs in the deep places of the world.
The ring has awoken. It's heard its master's call.
Support Anomaly through feedback and donations by visiting anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay, Rick.
And then Noah also sent something in.
Thank you, Noah.
Hello, everyone. This is Noah Concord Don on the forums. And I have to say Two Towers is one of my favorite Lord of the Rings movies ever made. It's right up there in the top three. Can't tell you exactly where. But I love it because it's just a good old slobber knocker of a movie, you know? There's a great battle scene. It starts off, first of all, you know, you got to start at the start. It starts with a great scene. You pan into the mountain and Gandalf fighting the Balrog. It takes you back all the way to the first movie, and it just puts you right back into the moment. Okay, here we are. Here's what we're doing. Here's Middle-earth. And there's a big fiery creature. And the storyline of the two main hobbits, Frodo and Sam, you kind of forget about that. We get introduced to Gollum, but when I think of the Two Towers, all I think about is the huge battle scene at the end and how epic and awesome that was. So, love the Two Towers. Can't wait to hear what you Anomalies have to say about it. Bye.
You're listening to the Anomaly Podcast with Jen and Angela. You're listening to the Anomaly Podcast with Jen and Angela. You're listening to the Anomaly Podcast with Jen and Angela. You're listening to the Anomaly Podcast with Jen and Angela. You're listening to the Anomaly Podcast with Jen and Angela.
Hi, Jen and Angela. This is Casey. I wanted to record an audio comment for you guys since you're recording an episode about The Two Towers, the second Lord of the Rings film. The main reason why I really love this film and I love everything about it. But I can watch it over and over just because of the performances in here. I love Andy Serkis's Gollum. He still should have been nominated for an Oscar, I personally believe. Ian McKellen is a given. He should be nominated for an Oscar for Living and win. But Elijah Wood, you know, just everyone in here. Viggo Mortensen, Miranda Otto as Eowyn. Oh my gosh, so many great characters in here. And John Rhys-Davies plays two characters between Gimli and, oh, I can't remember the name of the main tree. Why can't I remember? I'm going to feel so stupid later. Anyway, on to my question. Because I know both of you have had experience in acting, whether it be audio dramas or theater. I was curious, who do you think gives the best performance in this film? And, you know, you can name more than one, less than five, but in this movie alone, who do you think gives the best performance? Because I know that we prefer certain acting styles and, you know, we think maybe one character, you know, is played better than the other and according to our subjectivity and, you know, the way we imagined it when we were reading the book. So that is the question I have, and I think I'm going to leave it at that. I can't wait to hear all your comments because I'm sure that they're going to be much more detailed than mine. So can't wait to hear you, ladies. Bye.
Hi, Casey. Thank you for sending us your thoughts. We missed your email last Friday, so I'm recording this response a week later. This is a tough question to answer, but I know Angela and I agree that Miranda Otto nailed her role as Eowyn. We love her empowered character. Miranda played the part of a fearless, determined woman who doesn't want or need to be protected, and she does so with conviction. She brought the character to life and made us identify with her. And I think I have to go with Brad Dourif as my favorite actor in The Two Towers. He played Germa Wormtongue, the chief advisor to King Theoden of Rohan. Brad's performance made my skin crawl. He became the snake that Gandalf compared him to. Brad and Miranda's scene added tension and set the mood in Rohan. So fair, yet so cold, like the morning of a pale spring still clinging to winter's chill. Thank you again to Kevin, Casey, Rick, and Noah.
Message for you, sir.
Spoilers have breached the wall!
Stand
And now before we begin our main topic, Sarah, our anomalous correspondent, did this little report on the soundtrack.
Very nice.
Hi, it's Sarah. Bear with me with the sound quality. I'm doing this with my husband's handheld device because I cannot for the life of me find my mic anymore. I'm doing a little review on The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers score composed by Howard Shore. I'm a little nervous because I really love these scores and I want to do them justice and I have a million notes and I don't want to take too long, so I will try to keep it brief. So, I definitely feel like they picked the right guy for the score. It is absolutely amazing what Howard Shore does with this score. It literally just takes you to Middle Earth, boom, you're inside. The outside world doesn't exist anymore. And yes, that's partly the movies, but I really do believe that movies and music go hand in hand. And if you have a really terrible movie score, you're going to have people who are not totally immersed in the story. My best examples of how awesome the movie score is track 15. If you have the non-extended Lord of the Rings Two Towers CD, I would recommend getting the extended. 15, The Hornburg, is a prime example of Howard's genius. Seriously, who else could compose such a score that portrays desperation intermingled with hope, duty, fear, honor? There's so many feelings rolled into just the beginning of that track that make you feel so many different things. I really do feel that he just has an amazing gift to translate feeling into music. Also love in track The Hornburg at minute 3 and 12 seconds, the elves theme turned battle march. That was a stroke of wow right there. It's one of those things where you wouldn't have thought that that could work as a battle march, but it totally does. And it makes that scene where they're marching in even more amazing. I'm probably going to say this wrong, but track 16, Fourth Aerolingus, at minute 2:15, the most beautiful, amazing goosebump of a track. Words totally escaped me. I was listening to that. You know, I have the scores basically memorized, but I wanted to listen to this again to take notes so that I could do this justice. And oh my word, I looked down and I was wearing shorts and my legs were solid goosebumps. That is a really amazing. The conviction and power in that music is just absolutely stunning. Ben Del Maestro was a perfect pick for the vocals in that, and it's just amazing what that track makes you feel. Other examples of awesome track, I love Breath of Life with vocals by Sheila Chandra. Definitely has a dreamlike trance quality to it that obviously fits the, you know, what's going on in that scene. Love the Black Gate, minute 125, one of the most, I can't even really explain it. It's just, you hear weary strength and indecision. You hear exactly what the characters are going through at that minute. The depth of the strings at minute 1 and second 57 seriously takes my breath away. That's one of the things that I love about the score. The strings are amazing. They are so deep, they are so rich. They're just mind-blowing. Another thing I love about what Howard Shore does with these scores is that so often the instruments are symbolic to what's happening. You know, a lot of times he uses horns for the heroic themes, which is symbolizing strength. It's so many really amazing things with that. I also love that he uses more familiar instrumentation when it really fits, but he uses some really, you know, different things that we haven't really heard as often when he really wants to convey a feeling or, you know, a thought for a track specifically. One example that I have is The Leave Taking at minute 1, second 13. Galadriel's theme, Lothlorien's theme, the elf theme starts, and it's so fitting. It's so ancient. It sounds unpredictable. It sounds very different. It's got those strange squeaky sounds in the back that you heard it in other scores, but not all the time, and it really does do the trick. It makes you feel out of your element and really gets you into the movie. The score feels big, and the music feels like a world unto itself. It has a sound that doesn't take us out of Middle Earth, because suddenly it sounds like something we've heard before. It sounds like nothing we've really heard before. And still there's something familiar about it that makes us feel like, oh, maybe we've been here before. But he seems to have, you know, a great grasp of when themes need to be revisited and when new themes should be constructed. There are different times when themes come in, like Samwise the Brave at, I think it's near the end. I didn't write down the time for it, but when they have a reprise of In Dreams, which is one of my favorite songs from the first movie, that is just a really nice touch. He knows when to go have callbacks, and he knows when to have totally new stuff. I really feel like Howard Shore eases us seamlessly into Middle Earth. He suspends disbeliefs from the more skeptical minds and lets us completely immerse ourselves in a world where we've either been there before or we've never been there before. But movies, you know, if they have a bad score, it can really detract from the movie. It can be so weird or ill-fitting or just not matched that you might subconsciously hold yourself back from the movie. You might be on guard because something feels like it's off. Howard Shore's score, it really invites your entire mind inside and keeps you there. It's totally spellbinding. You let your guard down and you get your entrenched and immersed in a story and you start to care so much for the characters. There's a lot of people who saw this movie who hadn't read the book before. They're not going to have the background, you know, that the other people do, the care already. But I feel like his score, it makes it impossible to watch this movie with nothing less than your entire self. And it's really amazing and really a testament to Howard Shore's genius. I mean, the movie is an amazing movie. It would be an amazing movie even without the score, but I feel like the score and the movie, hand in hand, are definitely a force to be reckoned with, and I definitely think it is one of the best trilogies of scores I've ever heard. It's just perfect. That is all.
I'm starving. Ain't had nothing but Maggie breath for 3 stinking days.
Yeah. Why can't we have some meats? What about them? They're fresh.
They are not for eating.
What about their legs? They don't need those. They look tasty.
Thank you, Sarah. Your points were awesome, and I'm thinking you have some type of degree in music or something, because that was pretty deep.
I very much enjoy music theory, especially when it applies to shows. One of my very good friends is a composer, and I've done a lot of plays with him as a musical director, and he taught me a lot about how music affects things and what music means to certain people, and then it's how it's universal, how music is universal. So that was very interesting. Cool. Thanks.
Dave's Viking helmet is staring at me from across the room.
I know,
right now.
It kind of looks like a Rohirrim.
It does.
Doesn't it?
The Rohirrim is very Nordic. I always liked that.
Yes, and, part that, of it's, the, and that's the by movie. Intent, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's by intent.
Yes.
Did you want to talk about anything else before we got into the main topic?
I want to know about your Reddit article that you were talking about.
Well, what basically, the topic was, I don't want to get into this, but like somebody will just say, will someone please explain the debt ceiling to me? You know, and it's just mm-hmm. an ask. And sometimes they'll put like a stupid video and then people comment about it. But this was an ask Reddit. And that just means you ask like an open-ended question and anybody can answer. And the question was basically, what does the ring in Lord of the Rings do or signify?
Symbolize.
It was a more utilitarian question. It was more about like, what is the ring? I mean, in the context of the film, whoever responded was very succinct, but it was kind of, it was just a lot of information, as you can probably imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it boiled down to is that the ring is Sauron. And that basically it can do one of two things. In the hands of a hobbit or normal person, it makes that person like a slave to Sauron's will. Enslaves them to the evil of the ring. If it is in the hands of someone like Galadriel or Gandalf, it uses their power for good intentions and is able to turn it towards evil in its purest form. Mm-hmm. And like would turn someone like Gandalf or Galadriel into an evil god.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good idea. Nobody wants that. So that's interesting. He went into a little more explanation about the 9 rings and the 7 rings and the 3 rings, because they always talk about all the rings together.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 rings that the elves wear were not made with Sauron's knowledge. So the little trace of evil that's in the 7 and the 9
is not in the
elves' rings.
Interesting.
So a little bit of nerdiness there. I mean, that put me on track to read, like, you know, just a bunch of other stuff about Arwen and about Galadriel and about just the lives of the elves. And it's really interesting, too, because there's so much backstory. It's not just what you see in Lord of the Rings or anything like that. I mean, there's just so much backstory. I mean, Tolkien created this amazing... It's a world. I mean, he created a world with its own, like, ancient history. That's just amazing.
It's a place you wish you could visit in a lot of cases, like Hobbiton and
I would definitely
Rivendell.
Like to visit Hobbiton and Rivendell. That would be beautiful. I don't know if I'd be worthy. It'd probably, like, disappear once I got there. I don't know. But Lothlorien would be nice, too. She runs a pretty tight ship over there. Anyway, do you remember going to see this movie?
I remember being disappointed when it ended.
It did have a little more of a conclusion.
Than the first one did.
The first one.
Yeah.
So I remember coming out of the first one. I was with one of my friends, and we walked out of the theater, and some girl who, like, didn't know anything about Lord of the Rings was like, "That was it?" You know, because they're basically just starting the journey. So.
Yeah.
That was it. It didn't feel as anticlimactic. I mean, it still had a very climactic finish, more so than the first one.
I think. So if you haven't read Lord of the Rings, there's a lot of things that aren't in the movie, like Tom Bombadil, things like
Tom
that.
Tom Bombadil's in Fellowship.
Yeah, he's in Fellowship. I just mean as a whole
series.
They cut things out because there's no way you could get it all in a film.
No.
But what Peter Jackson has left is rich and beautiful and does nothing to detract. And I think the vast majority of Tolkien fans love the films. Whereas
I think so too.
A lot of times, hardcore fans of a series are very picky about things. And there are those who will pick on this series of films, but the majority like it.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite character?
Of this particular film?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. I would say my favorite character is probably Eowyn. I really love her. She kind of reminds me of Stephanie, but I love Rohan.
Me too.
I just love the whole idea of Rohan.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, that kind of Norse feeling. I'm of Germanic descent, and so it has kind of those, that kind of
undertone.
Saxon
undertone
to it. That ancient, ancient history of perhaps people that I descended from, you know, it harkens back to that. So that's kind of a, I don't know.
I love it for the same reason. David and I, our family is Scandinavian. It just feels like someplace our ancestors would have come from.
Yes.
The world that Tolkien created is, like I said, a place you want to visit. But
it's accessible.
But Peter Jackson brought it to life in cinema. You are imagining it when you're reading the book, but when you see it brought to life, it's so much more real. So.
I remember when I went and saw it. I went and saw it by myself. And I was actually... What was going on? I think I was finishing my... Yes, I was finishing my master's degree. And I didn't have a boyfriend. And I was kind of by myself. And I went to the movies a lot by myself at that time. I remember being in, like, an honest-to-goodness funk. I was kind of late for the movie. And so the first thing I came in on was after they had captured Gollum, and so that was kind of sad. You know, I went in kind of not feeling very well, and, you know, kind of being bummed out just about life in general, and I just watched this movie, and it just sort of, I don't know, it was like therapy. I felt like
cathartic.
It was very cathartic to watch the movie, and kind of brought me back center, you know, emotionally. I know that sounds dumb, but it was just a really good movie.
Yeah.
You know, I admit, you guys know I don't really read that much, and so I've read Fellowship, but I have never read Two Towers or Return of the King, and so this is all I know of the story, really, is the movie and the little bit of stuff I've listened to about the rest of the book. Like you said, it's so cathartic and so beautiful. It just makes you it makes you hope. I don't know about you, but I'm going to be talking about the extended.
Sure. It starts out on a downer.
It starts out with
Gandalf died at the end of the last film fighting a Balrog, and the Fellowship had to leave him in the Mines of Moria, so
basically, the beginning of this movie starts out with
them chasing after
it's the three
Pippin
different
and
stories. And I don't know, have you listened to the appendices where they talk about this? About the three different stories? Now, this is one place where the book and the movie are different. And that I really like that they did different in the movie. If you read the book, you have Gimli and Aragorn and
Legolas.
And you have Sam and Frodo, and you have Merry and Pippin. And those three stories are all happening
Simultaneously.
However, if you read the book, it starts, and I don't know who goes first, and it tells you the whole story of Merry and Pippin, and it tells you the whole story, and it goes back to the beginning, tells you the whole story of Legolas and Gimli and Aragorn, and then it goes back and tells you the whole story of Sam and Frodo. And so what they did in the movie is the writers went through and basically they meshed it together and decided, okay, well, what's happening and how do we fit this together? And they meshed it together so that the timeline made sense as things were happening at the same time. And so I'm sorry.
No, that's good to know.
Interject that, I know, before we go.
I'm glad that they did that because I think it would be very arduous to watch the whole movie
book
like that.
Would be. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why I wasn't able to finish The Two Towers. And that's one of my goals, is to pick it up again. Because I did finish, like you, I finished Fellowship.
Yes.
And then I started Towers, and I don't know why I didn't finish it. He did a lot of things, Peter Jackson, in shooting this film, where every time they show them running after the trail that the orcs left.
Mm-hmm.
Because the orcs kidnapped Merry and Pippin.
Right.
And so Legolas, Aragorn, and Gimli are tracking them, trying to locate them and save them.
Right.
And so every time Peter Jackson shoots them, they're always traveling in the same direction.
Right.
And I think it's the same for Frodo and Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about Merry and Pippin, because they're always all over the place.
Yeah, Merry and Pippin. So I
always thought that was cool. And another interesting fact about the movie is that in the costume design, which I love, they even designed undergarments.
Yes,
to be,
and
period.
The inside of armor. They designed the inside of armor that no one ever sees.
No.
But the person who's wearing it.
But they wanted them to feel the part. They wanted them to feel like they existed in this world and in that era.
Yeah,
so I thought that was really cool.
I mean, we could do a whole podcast just about the armor and the swords.
The armor in some parts of the film is rubber or something. And I think I remember seeing, I don't know if it was a documentary or something, but he was dissatisfied with one scene because you could see, like, something vibrate or move that shouldn't have moved, like it was rubber. Merry and Pippin, their whole adventure is also really cool because we get to meet the Ents.
Yes.
Who are an awesome race of, like, they look like trees, but they're creatures that their job is to take care of trees in the forest, and the orcs and Saruman and
are against that.
Sauron, they are burning trees and destroying forests to feed their war machine, which, you know, some people theorize is symbolic of World War One and and everything that he experienced during that time, because wasn't he a soldier in that time?
Oh, he was.
So he experienced a lot of war, and even though he says that, I think in the foreword, that this isn't based on anything. So, you know,
it's definitely influenced.
It's influenced by it.
Sure.
And you can see that. So anyway, Merry and Pippin meet the Ents, and I really love those, you know, the characters and their voices and how they resonate. And they take a long time to speak, and it's just almost agonizing that they can't make up decisions and make up their mind. How true is that? There are so many times when people can't make up their minds, and it
just said hello. The other thing about the Ents, though, that I like is that if somebody said to you, okay, we need to design some talking trees, I mean, that could go south. That could go south.
It could be like Wizard of Oz.
I mean, yeah, that could go south really, really, really easily. But I mean, you believe that the tree is talking and that it's a totally normal thing. And it works. I don't know how, but you believe in those trees, and they don't look cartoony.
Nope.
I mean, they look just creepy enough, but you accept that they're good. I have to say, one of my favorite things that happens, I'm going to say this throughout this because I love so many parts of this particular episode, series, or whatever. And I really like the beginning when Merry and Pippin are still with the Uruk-hai, and the three guys are chasing after them, and they get into the Riddimark, and they come across the, oh gosh, and I can't remember his name because he's like one of the characters, and Aegon's brother.
Oh, okay.
Who also plays in
Bones in Star Trek.
Anyway, I know the guy's name is Carl Urban. I don't remember his character's name. Anyway, so, and they're traveling because he's been banished because of what's going on with the king of Rohan, and they come across Legolas and Gimli and Aragorn, and they surround him. I just love that scene where they all surround the three of them, and he starts like talking smack to Gimli. I would cut off your head, dwarf, if it stood but a little higher from the ground. And then Legolas pulls an arrow on him immediately, and he's like, you would die before your first stroke fell. All of the Rohan guys are like arrows on him, and it's just so awesome because A, Gimli reacts perfectly because his eyes are just kind of shifting. He's like, oopsie.
Well, you know what I like about that is because they were rivals. Elves and dwarves don't get along.
Right.
And until that scene, they were always...
And they still do. They pick at each
other.
Yeah,
they pick at each other. But at that point, I think it was obvious to Gimli that they had developed some sort of friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Because Legolas would defend him against a huge company of guys with weapons drawn on them.
Yeah.
So
and Aragorn's like, okay, calm down, boys. Chill. That happens in Helm's Deep and a couple of other places. And I don't know how it is in the book, so someone may have to write in and school me. But I really enjoy how, especially in the movie... I mean, it's a dire situation. There's a lot of really heavy, heavy crap going on in Lord of the Rings, Two Towers especially. And to have the relationship between Gimli and Legolas the way that it is, it brings a little bit of levity to the story in general because, you know, it's really just kind of heavy. And I really like how it's a kind of comic relief, almost like an R2-D2 C-3PO kind of thing. You know, it brings a little bit of levity to an otherwise very heavy situation. And I really like that.
Because they begin their competition of counting how many orcs they've killed.
Oh, yeah, you're skipping to Helm's Deep. Yeah. But I do like that where they're standing there and he's all, can you see okay or do you want me to get you a box?
Or the whole, no one like, throws a dwarf.
And Gimli's like, and they're just like, you know, getting ready. So great.
We can't forget the story of Gandalf and his transition from Gandalf the Grey to Gandalf the White.
I mean, that's... Talk about cathartic.
I know he says he's not paralleling anything, but it's almost like Jesus rose from the dead. It's kind of like that kind of scene where they're all like, they can't believe he's back from the dead. I mean, it's this blinding light, and they think at first that, you know, it's someone coming to kill them, and
Saruman.
It's Gandalf, and he's ascended and come back and is this new person. And I get the feeling that he doesn't remember everything about who he was before.
Well, because time passed differently for him. He even kind of talks about how a millennia, in his world, a millennia went by and he was placed back. He was placed back to fix this. And I think that's interesting. That's definitely very interesting. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's totally off the mark because Tolkien was a devout Roman Catholic. I think that he would definitely put some Christ-like imagery. I mean, I don't see why not, why you put that kind of imagery in there. I don't know that it's necessarily a one-to-one comparison, but I mean...
It's definitely influence.
There's definitely influence in there. Yeah. What I thought was interesting, too, is that when you first meet them, when the three guys meet him in the forest, he says that he is Saruman. And if you listen really closely to the voices... When he starts talking while he's still blinding light.
Yeah, he uses his voice.
And I have seen this in the appendices too, where they talk about the production. It's their voices combined. And it combines and then Christopher Lee's voice gets softer and softer. And Ian McKellen's voice gets louder and louder. And then it's just Ian McKellen's voice. And so it's like a transition from this is what Saruman really was supposed to be. Gandalf came to take his place as the White Wizard, because the White Wizard is more of a position than it is. Not everybody can walk around and be a White Wizard. It's like, it's one guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it becomes Gandalf. And that's pretty cool. But there is something, I know the geeks mentioned this when they did their Two Towers episode a long, long, long time ago, that it's pretty hilarious when he calls the horse, the king of all horses, and then they're riding and, like, there's another horse that looks exactly the same. It's like... That's weird.
Well, in the book, Gandalf's horse was very special.
Oh, yeah, I know. And I imagined that.
Yeah. But I can't remember in the movie, everything about it, but I know that the horse made the decision to help Gandalf.
Right, okay.
And in Fellowship, when Frodo was being whisked away to Rivendell to be saved by Elrond, it was Gandalf's horse that took him there, not Arwen whisking him away. Although I love the fact that
in the movies
she has a larger role in the movies because Tolkien didn't give her very much of a role. So on to Frodo and Sam.
Right.
Frodo is beginning to be twisted corrupted by the ring. Mm-hmm. And I know what happens in the movie, but every time I watch it, I'm always wanting to tell him, don't trust Gollum. What are you doing? Why are you bringing him along? Gollum has his role in carrying the ring to Mount Doom, but I just know what happens in the end. Mm-hmm. And he's always, you know, he's split into two personalities. He's still
Smeagol,
and then there's Gollum, and he's arguing with himself a lot of times off to the side, you know, about killing them and strangling them and and taking the ring for himself. And Frodo, of course, has a lot of pity for him, and I think it came from when they were in Moria, and Gandalf told him, because Frodo was asking why Bilbo didn't just kill him when he had the chance.
And Gandalf corrects him and says that pity is what stayed Bilbo's hand. You do not have the ability to give the life to people who deserve it. You should not have the right to take it away.
So from that point on, Frodo sees Gollum in a different light and realizes what the ring did to him, because he's carrying the ring and he knows how it's affecting him. And so I think he feels like Gollum's the only other person that can understand.
I get the impression too that it's more one-to-one. It's more that he even tells Sam this. He says, I have to help him because I have to believe he can come back.
Right.
Because it's taking me, and I know it's taking me. If I can see good in him after all of the damage that the ring has done to him, then I can believe that I can come back. So he even says that. He says, I have to believe he can come back, Sam. I have to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is interesting, and I think that's what draws Frodo to him and makes him want to protect him, because he sees himself and he sees what he could be. The only thing is that Smeagol, now this is from Return of the King, but I think you see that Smeagol starts out as a not-so-savory character.
By killing his friend.
He starts out, you know, killing for the ring before the ring even really has a chance to, you know, before the ring even has a chance to affect him. I mean, he's just barely been exposed to it, and he's willing to commit murder.
Mm-hmm.
And Frodo has the ring for a long time before he starts reacting to it.
Why do you think that is? I mean, you think he was weaker-willed than Frodo?
No, not necessarily. I think, and this is just me, but I think what the ring does is the same thing it did to Galadriel. It amplifies what's already there. You know, it amplifies the evil within. And if you have someone simple, like, I don't mean in a bad way, simple and good, like Bilbo or like Frodo, then it's going to take a lot longer to affect that person than it is somebody that has evil in their heart already.
So you see Frodo and Sam trying to get to Mount Doom. The whole time, you're kind of feeling like any minute now, Gollum is going to stab him in the back.
I have to admit something, that the Gollum, Sam and Frodo thing is probably my least...
Me too.
I'm the least interested in that. I could follow the guys around forever. I mean, and even Merry Pippin and Treebeard.
Yeah.
I could watch that for a long time too, because I feel like... But I just, I'm not as... Which is hilarious because it's like the main story.
Yeah.
You know, the main story is the story.
Why do you think that is? It makes me uncomfortable. That's why I don't like it.
Yeah, I think that's part of it too. And I hate seeing him start to turn against Sam. Like,
yeah.
That just makes me... It happens more in Return of the King, but watching him turn against Sam is hard to watch, because Sam is just like such a pure soul, and it's hard to watch. You're right. And then Gollum himself. I mean, I find the achievement on Gollum was pretty awesome. I think Andy Serkis did a great job, you know, filling in for that, and that the animators did an awesome job on Gollum himself. And I think that was definitely one of those. Is a beautiful thing that they did with him, but it's definitely an interesting story, but it's just the least interesting part for me, you know, compared to everything else. That's just how. But it does become more interesting when they do meet up with Faramir, I think, because I find Faramir very, very cool. The differences between him and Boromir are interesting, and I think too. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that one of the things they were saying in the documentaries is that. In the book, there's almost a disconnect because Faramir doesn't seem affected by the ring, evidently. They wrote that into the movie, that he was more affected by it. And the only reason he was trying to get it is because his father wanted it. And he wanted so bad, even though we find out later his father's a crazy person. But But he wants so bad to please his father and be like his brother. That's the reason he's trying to take the ring. It's not because he's been affected by it. They felt like there was a disconnect there, and so they wrote in more tension between Faramir and the ring. I mean, the ring itself is a character. They were very good at creating the ring as a character in the movie, mm-hmm. just like any other character.
I think that they did a great job of zooming in on the ring and the thump, 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 thump sound of the heartbeat. And just, it's like all of Frodo's focus has gone into listening to that ring and what it's whispering to him. And the film, I think, did a great job of illustrating that. Mm-hmm. And you feel the weight of it.
You do.
You know, when you hear that thump, 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 thump of the heartbeat. I think that helped in creating the character of the ring.
Mm-hmm. Another one of my favorite things is, technologically, I guess, or artistically, is when Gandalf goes to Rohan and frees King Theoden from Saruman. The transition, once he does get him, you know, once he does free him from the spell or from the curse or whatever, and how he, like, transitions back mm-hmm. from, like, old man and transitions back to, mm-hmm. like, a guy in his 60s. That's really, really cool.
He was possessed. Well, he was possessed.
He was possessed.
And he was blind to what mm-hmm. was going on, and then all of a sudden his eyes were clear, and the first thing he saw was
his son dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Well, did he see him dead, or he just asked where he was?
He asked where
he saw Eowyn first.
He saw Eowyn first, mm-hmm. and then he asked about his son, and his son died, like, in the meantime, because that had all happened when... Did you ever find his name? When Eowyn's brother leaves, and Eowyn's brother is the one who brought him back.
And then he was banished by Wormtongue.
Right.
Which,
right.
That man... Ugh.
Oh, what a cool actor, though. Oh, my gosh. You just, like, messed me up. Because there's only a few American actors.
Sorry, hold on. Let me fix this. Okay, yeah, that guy, Wormtongue, freaks me out.
But what just else can't actor? You know he's one of the, like, biggest icky bad guys from X-Files.
Yeah, I recognize a character that was...
He played a serial killer
who
could, and I can't remember his name, but he played a serial killer who could talk to the dead. And he channeled Scully's father while he was, like, in lockup or something like that.
He was waiting on Death Row.
He was waiting on Death Row or something. Yeah. And it's him. And he just kind of plays those characters. And he is, in the documentary, if you watch the documentaries from the extended edition, he's hilarious. I mean, he's so American. The only reason I say it is because when you're watching the documentaries, you got all of these actors. Okay, so you got Frodo and Sam are American. And Viggo and this guy are American. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is English or New Zealand or Irish or, you know, they're all like, and so everyone kind of has more of a proper way of speaking and talking. And you know, Viggo's very, mm-hmm. and, you know, he's very soft in the way that he speaks and talks like this. And this guy's like, oh man, F that, this, that, the other, and I don't know about this, and I'm gonna have to shave my eyebrows off. He's just all over the place, and he's so funny. I mean, he's just really... if you not have the extended edition, go buy it right now. It's on Blu-ray. And watch the appendices. Anyway, so Wormtongue, sorry.
What is his relationship with Saruman?
He's just one of Saruman's little guys.
And wasn't he in the tower when the Ents attacked? He was with Saruman.
He was in the tower when the Ents attacked.
Yeah, he fled after Theomir was... Was it Theoden? His name is Theoden, right?
Theoden King?
Yeah.
Yes. But they don't attack Saruman. The Ents do.
Right. Yeah. I just mean that he fled the tower. He fled Rohan.
Right.
And that's where he went.
Yeah. He's going to kill him and...
He just kicked him out.
Talked him out of it and just kicked him out.
There's been enough killing, is what he said.
Yes.
And like his namesake, he kind of slithers away, which I thought was a nice...
I know.
...exit for that
Éomer.
Éomer, thank you. These names, they're all based on...
They're Norse.
Yeah.
And they're all
Celts
based on...
Celts also, right?
And Celts, and they're based on... they're all horse. It's all horses. Because evidently, like, Éomer and Éowyn means horse, lover, like, no, mm-hmm. that's gross. But, you know, one who loves horses.
Yeah.
Or beloved by horses or whatever. It's about horses. I don't mean that. That sounded gross. Like, it sounded a lot sweeter in my head. Anyway. Oh, Helm's Deep. Let's talk about Helm's Deep.
Oh, my gosh. The thing that grabs me every time is that the children are having to defend Helm's Deep too.
Oh yeah, that just gets like, me. That
I could just imagine Russell and Aaron having to take up arms.
They probably not have to.
When they're the same age as the boy that's right, in the movie. Okay. I'm thinking when they're older. But the kid was, what, 8?
Yeah.
Something like that. Like, and he's having to defend the keep. The keep, because there's not enough people.
Oh, because they all got... Oh, you skipped one of my favorite parts. Okay, because they're moving and the Wog Riders go out. Oh, I love... And I remember this was a trailer. This is a trailer, like, back in the day. And it was, like, one of those long trailers. They would do, like, oh, a special sneak peek. And they showed the scene where they're all riding towards, you know, they just left Rohan. And they got everybody with them. They clash and then it cuts. And it's like, oh! But then, one of my favorite things that always makes me really, really happy in that scene is, and I know that it's completely impossible, and I know it was all computer generated, and I do not care. The riders come up, Gimli is riding one of the horses and comes to get Legolas, and Legolas like puts his hand up and like flings himself onto the horse, and I don't know how he does it, but it's awesome! I mean, again, I know it's...
That part bugs me more than any other scene.
Why? I love it!
Because it looks so fake.
Oh, I don't think it looks fake at all. I love it. Stop it.
That's the only part that looks fake. I'm sorry. That's the fakiest part of the whole movie.
I love it.
But, I mean, overall, the special effects hold up. It's been a long time since these... Well, for CGI, it's been a long time since these films came out. And I think that it still looks good. Yeah. Still looks good.
Yeah.
Except for that part.
I love that. You're a hater. Don't be a hater.
But Théoden didn't want to... What was his deal? He was waiting for... Aragorn's people. What are they called? Ugh, it's escaping me.
Gondorians?
He was waiting for Gondor.
It's not really...
He doesn't expect them to come. And he's basically giving up. I feel like, at some point, he just...
Well, he's doing what he's always done. I mean, he's always been able to defend his people by going to Helm's Deep. That's just where they defend themselves.
But when the wall is breached and they keep having to retreat, and he thinks that that's it, you know, we're up the creek without a paddle.
Well, but that's the difference between him and Aragorn. I mean, that's just Aragorn is king. I mean, it's not that Théoden's not, but Théoden has been, I mean, frankly, he's past his prime, and he's also been poisoned by evil for quite a while, so he doesn't think the same way that Aragorn does.
But didn't Gondor, like, mess him over at some point,
He
just doesn't think they're going to come through for him?
Yeah, they don't really have a good relationship, and you know that the steward of Gondor is a crazy person, so, I mean, of course he probably has been acting like that. Aragorn tells him, no... we'll just stay here and fight. And he's like, no, we've never done that. Let's not do it. You know, there's no way we can do it on our own. And he's like, well, then call Gondor. Gondor will help.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I'm the king. We're going to Helm's Deep.
Yeah, that's right.
Screw Gondor. I'm not even going to try. And then that's when Gandalf leaves to go get the riders to, you know, kind of a Hail Mary pass.
Mm-hmm.
And then the three guys and the king and all of them go to Helm's Deep.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
But before...
So they just mention Gondor, but they don't... That's something that's in the history.
Yeah, see, it's not as fresh in my mind because been a few months since I've seen it.
And again, by accident completely. Yeah.
But the one thing that I think is so awesome is before any of that happens, the elves come to help.
No. When? Are you talking about in Helm's Deep?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right before the actual war starts.
Yeah,
so
that's what I'm saying. They've come
And that does not happen in the book. But... When they talk about it on the appendices, one of the writers was like, even the people who are diehard Tolkien fans,
still
when those elves show up, everybody's like,
woohoo!
Yeah! I'm glad you mentioned that, because Haldir is pretty much my favorite person in the entire universe.
Because you think he's hot.
Because I love Craig Parker a lot. He's the bad guy in Legend of the Seeker. And I find him hot then, too. And I have no idea, because he's not, like, the best-looking guy, necessarily. But there's something about him. I find him very attractive. And I'm very sad when he dies. Really sad about
Me
that.
Me, too.
Very sad about that. I don't know what it is, but I really think he's cute. Haldir. Hal Deer's my favorite, and I think he's gay too, which that always happens. But
yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you know.
But when you're attracted to him.
Yeah, but when you have like a thing, it's a little sad. It's just a little sad, but yeah. Oh, Hal Deer. He's my favorite. Mm-hmm. Also, he's a little beefy to be an elf, don't you think? I mean, compared to some of the other elves, just, you know.
Like Legolas. But they're from a different place.
Yeah.
Like, Legolas is from another region.
True.
So, but yeah. You know what's funny is that the actor that plays that role, he's short in stature.
He is. He's not very tall.
But they make him seem like he almost towers over Legolas even.
Yeah. Oh, we keep jumping around. When they're tracking Merry and Pippin, the riders had just slaughtered all the Uruk-hai, and they pretty much find one of their belts or something, and they're worried that they had been burned with the orcs, and Aragorn gets very upset and he kicks one of the helmets and then he goes, ah, like really loud. And in the backstory, or like, you know, the behind the scenes story, they tell how basically when he did that, he broke his toe, like for serious. They used the shot when he broke his toe because when he screams, it's like a scream of agony. So he like kicks the helmet and he goes, ah!
It's very believable.
And it's very believable because he was very, very hurt. He was actually hurt. So.
I think that he's probably happy that scene was used because that means he didn't break his toe for nothing.
Yeah, that's true. You don't break your toe in vain. So yeah, I just think that story is kind of interesting. So yes, when the elves show up in Helm's Deep, that is definitely like a very, it makes you kind of breathe a sigh of relief.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, whew.
Like there's a lot of those instances where you need to exhale.
Yes.
And when it happens, you really do. You exhale. Sometimes you laugh and sometimes you cheer.
Yeah. But that's one of those moments where it's just like, yes.
Yeah.
Something's going our way. And Aragorn's awesome. He's all, you are most welcome.
Yeah. When he welcomes
the
guy.
Oh, we didn't even talk about how Aragorn, like, they think he's dead. We forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Part. So when the Wog Riders come and they fight, and then Eowyn's mad, she wants to fight and he won't let her, blah, blah. Anyway, so she takes everybody, all the women and children, to Helm's Deep, and everybody else, and the guys sit and fight. And while this is going on, of course, you know, Aragorn takes a tumble up the cliff and we think he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
But of course he's not. Arwen, you know, the magic of the elves and Arwen's love save him. And also because he's Numenorean and...
Explain what Numenorean is.
Oh, and this is another thing we find out too. Oh, gosh. This is only an extended edition. Eowyn is feeding him some gruel or whatever, and they're talking. And it's a cool scene because she's like, this is going to sound weird, but, you know, my uncle says that you rode off with my grandfather in some war. And he's like, oh, you know, your uncle has a good memory. He was a little boy. And, you know, and this is like a 60-year-old man. And he's like, what? She's like, come again? You know, he was a boy. You know, how old does that make you? And so basically she figures out that he's like almost 90. That Aragorn's almost 90. And that means he is a Dunedain, which is the people from the north who are... I read about this recently, but I don't remember all of it. And then basically he's just from a ruling race of people that they're human, but not quite human. And I dare even say that they're almost like half human, half elf, but I think Arwen and Elrond are half elves.
Are they?
Mm-hmm. Ah, I just read this recently. Elrond and Arwen are both half elves. Galadriel is a full elf.
Interesting.
I know.
Because they never let on in the...
They never really talk about it, no.
Not in the movies. And they make it seem like Arwen has to make this decision to give up her...
Immortality
to be with Aragorn.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess they can still live a long time as half-elves.
Oh, yes. The half-elves still live a pretty long time. Mm. But, like, the difference is, like, I think Arwen... And again, I just looked this up, so... I think Arwen's like 2700 when she does die, eventually. And Galadriel, though, was like 7000 or something. I mean, I may be wrong, but there's like almost a...
Where are you getting this information?
From the Lord of the Rings Wikipedia.
Ah. But can we trust the Wikipedia?
Yeah, it could be wrong. I mean, I admit it could be wrong. But that's the impression that I got.
That's interesting. Well, if anybody out there knows if this information is factual, website or whatever. Email us.
And that's what the forums are for too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm always up for good discussion about it, and I definitely do not consider myself a Lord of the Rings nerd by any stretch of the imagination, except for I really, really love it. I stay up some nights and randomly start reading stuff about it that I can. And it's funny, too, how I have trouble reading the book, but I could sit and read all that stupid crap.
I know. There's a book that I have called Following Gandalf that I bought that it just kind of it's full of symbolism and stuff and kind of explains. And I haven't actually sat down to read it yet, but I'm going to make that my goal before Return of the King.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So we can talk about that, too. So all that happens, and then...
Oh, then we think he's dead.
We think he's dead.
But that horse, the horse that he let go, finds him and takes him to help him. And another one of my favorite scenes is him pushing through those doors.
He's... You have to rewind just a little bit. One of my favorite scenes is when Eowyn's practicing with her sword.
Oh, yes! And that's so good from the quote that I did earlier. Mm-hmm.
And she pivots around and stops the blade while he blocks it with his elven dagger, right? Or it's like a short sword or something. Something that he was given at...
Something, yeah,
by,
yeah.
By Galadriel. So anyway, I love that scene. And just that character, she's... a strong woman, but she's still feminine, and she knows her duty, but she wants more. And I don't know, I just like the way Tolkien treated her, because she had more of a role in the way the story ended.
Yeah, the whole show is pretty much a dude festival. That's why I like her, is because it's all guys, and so it's
a dude festival. It's true. It's true.
I was gonna say something else, but it's inappropriate.
Well, let's consider when Tolkien wrote it and...
Well, no, I understand.
You know, the mentality of...
I mean, basically, we're talking about war, and war is man's
For the most part, yeah. Unfortunately, for anyone, you know, it shouldn't be men or women who take part in war.
No. But yeah, she is really an awesome character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like her.
When I first watched the movie, I didn't like her. Because she was... trying to woo Aragorn away from Arwen.
You know, you and I were talking about this.
But after, I mean, after I've seen it the second time or something,
I don't think she
was trying too hard. She just was in love with him.
Also, I mean, look at him. He's going to be king too. Wouldn't you put... I would put it on the line for that.
Yes.
I would definitely go after
And he did
Aragorn.
Tell her that she was going...
That she was going away
with her people. And so for
her... Why the heck not? And she's basically a princess.
Yes.
He's going to be the king. I mean...
So to her, he's open season.
I mean, I would definitely put my, you know, put myself on the
line. Put your hat in the ring.
I put my hat in the ring. Why the heck not?
Me too.
Anyone's no fool.
I know Sarah has a problem with her.
She does. Didn't I have a conversation with her about this?
I don't remember. On the forum, maybe, or on Facebook?
No, it was a Facebook thing. She and I had a Facebook conversation about this. I would definitely do that. And I don't begrudge her. I don't begrudge her at all. And also, there's that beautiful scene where they swoop down, and she's wearing that beautiful dress, and she's standing there.
The costume I made for the Renaissance Festival the second year that we went was modeled after that.
Oh, yeah, with the long sleeves and everything.
The long sleeves and the bodice and the cincher. That was all based on her costume. I love everything that she wears. Arwen's costumes are beautiful also.
Everyone's costumes are beautiful. Yeah, but I do like the design on, like we were talking about, all of the Rohan stuff I really just like. So, like the colors and...
Their hair and their helmets and everything.
Yep, definitely.
So, we're almost done with the movie. What we should probably... Talk about how it ends.
Talking about all the things we love about it.
Oh, yeah. One of the biggest parts where you cheer is when the Ents finally make their decision.
And I can't believe that you said that. I have to admit, I have not listened to Sarah's comments about the soundtrack. But I'll tell you right now that I have a visceral reaction every time I watch the Ents march on Isengard. Mm-hmm. When that boy soprano starts singing... My stomach, my heart, everything, like, almost like I'm about to go off the edge of a roller coaster every single time I listen to that. And I think it's it's the perfect combination of what's going on in the scene, what's happening, and that crescendo of that soprano and tight piece of filmmaking. I mean, it's just beautiful and awesome. All we're doing is talking about how much we love it. We're like, I like this part because I like this part.
It's quite a contrast from Spaceballs.
Yes, it is. But if you can possibly sample that now when we're talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, just thinking about it makes my heart...
As soon as you talked about the soprano, I could hear the voice.
I know the exact voice. And I'm not going to try to sing it because I cannot reproduce it. There's a quality to a boy soprano that you cannot...
Mm-hmm.
You can't reproduce with a woman.
It's haunting.
It's just... It's haunting and beautiful and just... I know.
That scene where the Ents, they've made their decision... Merry and Pippin are like, yeah, let's go. And they get their rocks and they're marching on Isengard and throwing their rocks. So and Treebeard's like, good shot. So Saruman gets his keister handed to him in a sling by the Ents because they just clean house and release like a dam or something. And
yes. The river that he had dammed up in order to do all of his technology.
Floods Isengard and puts out the fires of their war machine and washes all those dirty, filthy goblins and orcs away. And
smashes them.
Yeah, and then they're pacing in a tower in like these rats, cornered rats on a sinking ship. I just love that. That's one of those fist-pumping moments.
It is, definitely. And also a good fist-pumping moment is First Light on the third day. And they have been fighting, and finally all the Rohan riders come up and with Gandalf, and they start attacking from the other side, and you're just like, ah!
I'm not sure if I'm confusing the book with the movie, but doesn't Gimli find some tobacco?
No, this is what you were thinking of, is right after the fall of Isengard. Merry and Pippin find the like storage of Saruman's storage and find not just it's from the Shire. It's Longbottom leaf. Basically, you know, weed.
You put your weed in it.
Yeah, you put your weed in there. The hobbits like to soak it up, I think. And also a bunch of food and stuff, too. Uh-huh. And so they're very, very excited. And I think this is actually the beginning of Return of the King, isn't it? When they actually find them there. But anyway.
I think so. It's been a while since. Yeah. Have you played any of the games or
I was thinking of that when we were talking about the Fall of Isengard, because I have a Return of the King game that I had for GameCube from a long time ago. And I played The Fall of Isengard is how it starts, is one of the places where it starts. And you play... Who do you play? Anyway, the Ents are still attacking the goblins that had, like... Or the orcs that had gone into the forest to flee. And so you're helping the Ents. I think you're Gandalf or something. Mm-hmm. And you're shooting stuff at the Ents. And, or not the Ents, the goblins. So... I haven't played all the way through that game.
Yeah, and then there's like an MMO also, a Lord of the Rings online.
There is. I haven't played,
but I know that Rick Moyer's son plays that game and loves it. So if anybody out there plays Lord of the Rings online, we want to know about that game. And then there was the soundtrack and what else?
Also, we talked about how Faramir does let them go. And I really love when Sam confronts Faramir because he's like, you know, we're going to take the ring to Gondor, and he's like, you cannot do that, you can't do it. And he tries to like touch Frodo, and Frodo like freaks out, and Sam's like, you want to know the truth? You know what happened to your brother, your sweet brother that you love so much? It drove him crazy, and he tried to kill Frodo even though he swore an oath to protect him. Smoke on that, baby. That's what Sam says. He's like,
that's right. They were in the cave, and Gollum at that point had been good Gollum.
And that's the other thing, too, is that, like, this misunderstanding happens with Gollum.
Being in the pool,
and they try to kill... And that's kind of where everything starts going south, because Gollum had been doing better and had kind of suppressed his evil side to start helping... I mean, you really kind of feel like he is trying to help Frodo, and then this whole thing happens, and it's this weird, like, Three's Company misunderstanding, and And then all heck kind of breaks loose, yeah. And other Gollum kind of...
It was a forbidden pool that was
Gondor. And we don't even know if that's really true, or if the Gondorians were just trying to...
Capture him,
yeah. Just to capture him. You don't know. We'll never mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but Faramir does end up letting him go after the Nazgul attack them and mm-hmm. try to get him, and he almost gives the ring away. Oh, and then there's a good part, a couple other good parts with that part of the story, is... He asks Sam, you know, why are we doing this? And he was like, because we have to believe that there are things worth fighting for.
I like that line.
And I really like that line. Yeah,
because there are.
Yeah. And then also when they're going in, you know, after they've let him go, mm-hmm. and, you know, he starts talking about, oh, you know, you think we'll be part of the great stories? And he's all, Samwise the Brave.
I love that.
And then he has kind of a smirk on his face because he's like, Samwise the
yeah.
Brave.
I love Sam. Sam's the kind of guy you want on your team, I think.
He's
just
perfect.
Always there for you.
Yeah.
And then, do you have a favorite quote in the movie?
A
favorite moment?
I think my favorite quote is the one that I did earlier.
Yeah.
With Eowyn. I mean, I really like that about her. I mean, except for probably that one with Sam, which is kind of sums up the entire series. Why do we have to fight? Because there are things worth fighting for. But I do like that from Eowyn. You know, he asks what she does fear, and she just mm-hmm. says a cage. To be locked away until age.
Mm-hmm.
Something about losing all chance of valor. And I like that.
One of my favorite parts is when Gandalf is describing his fight with Balrog.
Oh, yeah,
and,
I like that.
And at the end he goes, and then I threw down my enemy and smote his ruin upon the mountainside.
That's
love
good.
That part. And then another scene that I really enjoy is when Sam is making stew. He's talking about potatoes. Gollum is like, what is taters, precious? And he's like, potatoes. Boil and mash them, put them in a stew. David and I always do that. Whenever we are making anything with potatoes, we always go, potatoes. Yeah, also the scene with Eowyn. And the one you quoted at the beginning of the podcast.
Very anomaly.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. I agree. Well, I think this is a good one.
I hope so. We pretty much just talked about how awesome it was.
Well, I think there was a lot of good points in there.
I really can't think of anything. I mean, just to wrap up, I can't really think of anything I don't like.
I know.
Mean,
and you know us. We'd be very honest.
We would be very honest. And maybe if we had been big readers of the book, then maybe we would have more things to say against it. But
probably.
Another thing that I remember from the movie appendices that Peter Jackson says is that one of the ways that he defends it, basically, to people that do say something to him is like, you know, this is just one group of fans' version of the story. And if you think about it kind of like that, and it was a labor of love, they happen to have a lot of money too, which helped, but it's very obvious. And there's people who I know who aren't even huge fans, who just kind of appreciate movies, who love these movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, it won so many awards and stuff, even, you know, from regular old Academy Award stuff, that it really does reach further than, I mean, it's still our thing, mm-hmm. but... It reaches further.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful piece of movie.
It is.
So, check. And if anything, I would say it probably improved on the book.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yep.
All right. So, you want to wrap it up and
talk
about a few of our businessy type things?
What kind of businessy type things?
What we're doing for our next episode?
I don't know. What are we doing?
We're doing a round table.
Oh, that's right. Oh, is that... Really?
In
September.
Yeah, 'cause
this is our August one.
Yeah. Most of the music played in this episode is courtesy of Justin R. Durbin. Thanks so much, Justin. You can find out more about Justin, his music, and how to hire him at justindurbin.com. JustinDurbin.com. Among other things, Justin was the composer for the fan film Star Trek of Gods and Men. And we might just be interviewing him soon. If you haven't listened to Anomaly Supplemental yet, please check them out. Anne and Sue and Casey are doing such a great job. Their latest episode was on Jim Henson's Labyrinth, and it was hilarious and very informative. So please go listen to that and send them some feedback. You can do that through our website. And as always, you can send us feedback through the website. We love getting emails. There's also a way to call us. No one's going to answer the phone and say hello in the middle of the night. Don't worry. You can just leave a voicemail. So what's next on Anomaly? We're going to have a roundtable discussion about anomalies. We're going to be talking about stereotypes. We're going to be talking about women in science fiction fantasy, all kinds of stuff related to life as an anomaly and what our thoughts are on geekdom. We're also going to be interviewing Mer Lafferty. She's a writer, a blogger, a podcaster. She used to do a show called Geek Foo Action Grip, and she does I Should Be Writing, and she is the chief editor of Escape Pod, which is a science fiction literature podcast, which is awesome. I highly recommend it. We're also going to be interviewing Teal Scher. She is Venom from the Guild. She's a very awesome lady, very down-to-earth and kind. Sue is going to be interviewing Mignon Fogarty, Grammar Girl. So stay tuned for that. Like I said before, we're going to be introducing more interviews as specials on Anomaly. And we're working on scheduling an interview with Virgin Galactic. They are trying to privatize space travel. And we're going to be talking to, I think he said he is the president of Special Projects. So stay tuned for that. We're also working on getting interviews with a few astronauts and former astronauts, one of which lives very nearby. We didn't even know, but Noah has interviewed him before and has offered to make an introduction. So we will be telling you more about that interview very soon. I'm Jen.
And I'm Angela.
And you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast,
where female and fandom converge.
Anomaly is created under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. Say that three times fast. Gamma Quadrant Golf Clap.
The Treks in Sci-Fi Podcast.
Stand by to receive our transmission.
Sci-Fi Entertainment News and Commentary.
I am Locutus of Borg.
Star Trek Episode Analysis.
Captain of the USS Enterprise.
Pokey religions and ancient weapons.
Collectibles, toy, and prop reviews.
I am to misbehave.
The weekly Treks in Sci-Fi podcast with your host Rico at treksinscifi.com.
Hi, this is Rick Moyer. I am a voiceover artist and a geeky musician and a podcaster, and I am an anomaly. It's just true. I love the Anomaly Podcast. It's really a lot of fun. I like listening to it, and I think it's worthy of your listen, too. So just keep it right here and listen. Send in your donations to help them keep it going all the time and do cool things like participate in their discussions and go to the forum and all that jazz. It's really, really a lot of fun. Hey, and you can find my music by going to the Anomaly Podcast website, anomalypodcast.com, and then you look over on the side, and I'm a sponsor of the Anomaly Podcast, go figure, and you can get all three of my albums just by clicking on them. So there, thanks for listening to the Anomaly Podcast. Girls, ladies, you rock.
This is Jeff from Champ Podcast. After you finish listening to this excellent podcast, I invite you to come listen to ours. My co-host Jason and myself cover open wheel auto racing, focusing on Formula One and IndyCar. Each podcast we review the races, we talk about drivers and teams and all the news and rumors as well. So come give us a go. We can be found at www.champpodcast.com, that's with one P, or in iTunes, search Champ Podcast. Champ Podcast, the world's fastest podcast.
Hello, Dan here. Well, you have impeccable taste since you're listening to this wonderful podcast. It's one of my favourites too. If you feel that you could squeeze another show into your regular listening though, why don't you give mine a go? It's called Out of Range, and I talk about the things I love. Everything from geeky TV, classic toys, and brand new technology and gadgets. You may find something you like, or be introduced to something you've never heard of. Search for Out of Range in iTunes, or go to the website at dangelus.com/out of range. I'd love to hear from you. Happy listening.
The end.